Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Roslevy, here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Every week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between your personal health and well-being and our total environment, everything going on in our world with our food, water, air, and earth, with our communities, with our society, with our social policies, and with the state of planet Earth. Every week on Connect the Dots, I talk with different thought leaders, authors, experts, scientists, advocates, and other creative people about all of the different facets of what's going on in our lives and our world that affect our health and well-being. I'm a longstanding health journalist and environmental and food journalist going back around 20-plus years. All of these things are interconnected, although in our marketing-based society, we kind of regard them all as separate niches, and that's what we talk about every week on Connect the Dots. Obviously, the span of the program, as regular listeners will know, is quite broad and integrative, and that leads us to today's theme. There's so much going on in our world, so much that we all have to deal with, things that we need to pay attention to, and sometimes it's just overwhelming. It's overwhelming in terms of what's going on in our greater society, in our world. It's overwhelming in terms of our personal lives. And today we're going to be talking about how all of those diverse demands and pressures come down on women. The author of the book we'll be discussing on today's show is Sally Park Rubin, along with the second author is Rosalind Rifkin. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. The book we'll be talking about is The Overfunctioning Woman's Handbook. Does that sound familiar? The subtitle is Uncommon Sense to Deal with Impossible Jobs and Impossible People. And I'm really delighted to have today's guest on the show. She is someone with terrific insight and energy whom I've known for many, many years, and it's a total delight to welcome to Connect the Dots author Sally Park Rubin. Welcome, Sally.
Hi, Allison. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. I think a lot of people listening to this show can identify with these themes. I certainly know that I can. First off, before we kind of talk about, what you may recommend, give us a picture about why there's so much coming down for so many of us as women to deal with.
Okay. all right. So as women have become more educated, of course, we've wanted to be in the workplace. And yet, with all of that, we've taken on a lot of the traditional roles of women just haven't been shed. And not that they should be. I'm not saying that they should be. I'm just saying that we've added on as opposed to taking a look at the whole smorgasbord of things that we do and really reflected on just the idea that there's time in life for different pieces of all of what life is in the whole journey. I find with the younger women in particular, there's a sense of, well, I'm going to get my, my house, and then I'm going to have my children, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to, it's all kind of pre-planned, right? And things can go along very well until something happens, and then the whole thing can come unraveled. I'm not saying that it always does or that it will, but, children are their own
They have a lot going on with them.
They have a lot going on. There's stuff with the schools, and there's way more things to deal with, I think, for younger parents today than there were, for example, when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's very difficult to sort out what matters most to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You add in the sort of ADD soundbite culture to all this, and You've got, you know, it's kind of like, what was that? Oh, Baraka or whatever. You remember that movie where everything just got, like, speeded up in life? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
About,
I don't know that particular movie, but I can certainly identify with what you're talking about things getting speeded up in life, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the background. The book that I've written, The Overfunctioning Woman's Handbook, doesn't spend that much time laying out the playing field because
mm-hmm.
we all know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a piece of one piece of it I do want to say is that the culture has become so much more narcissistic it's a piece that we sort of take for granted. But women are problem solvers. And so when you get hooked into a narcissistic situation, one thing that adds to overfunctioning is just the, you know, wanting to make it right no matter what. And,
right.
that can
Let's
put
talk
people...
about what we mean by a narcissistic situation. I think there's like a psychological definition of what a narcissist is. But, you know, I like your formulation, Sally, of like a narcissistic situation. That's, you know, like go into that a little bit more so that people can, you know, kind of recognize what we're talking about here when we say narcissistic situation.
Okay. Well, you know, without getting too psychological, because I am not
mm-hmm.
a psychologist,
mm-hmm.
Let's face it, everyone is sort of insecure until they're not, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you gain a sense of security as you gain mastery in life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so for younger people, there's a sense of, oh, I need to prove myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I fell into this
mm-hmm.
when I was younger, less hooked by those things now than I was years ago. But
mm-hmm.
there are so many messages from everywhere that are constantly bombarding us with, you know, just images of, I mean, this is sort of, we all know this, right? Images of beauty, images of somebody doing it bigger, better, faster, people making more money, you know, all of those strivings, right?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
and so it's easy to feel less than, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And that pressure is coming from everywhere. You know,
mm-hmm.
I love David Foster Wallace's speech to the graduating class of Kenyon College when he says, it was entitled, "This is Water." And someone's made a little video about it on YouTube, which your listeners can look up. And there, it starts off with this older fish swimming, you know, by a younger fish saying, so, hey, boys, how's the water? And the younger fish says, what's water, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like
mm-hmm.
we don't really see it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see it until you step back. But, like, for example, when I say to a woman, oh, my book is, you know, about overfunctioning, you know, everybody just, there's this, like, this collective sigh, like,
mm-hmm.
oh, my God, that is so me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the meat of what, and I will answer the narcissistic question in a second,
mm-hmm.
but the meat of what I'm getting at here is to look at, to put a little, I'm thinking of the word periscope, but that's not the word, lenses on each aspect of how we individually get hooked. And one of the hooks, and those hooks put us into a state of automatic action.
Mm-hmm.
And often it's triggered by language. And and let's face it, you know, Madison Avenue has us figured out. They've had us figured out for decades. They created American culture. And
mm-hmm.
And so there's this whole, like, one of the words, for example, that I really, that gets my hair up on the back of my neck is the word excited. Because everybody will say, oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. Well, you know, what does that do to your body, really, you know? And what does it mean, I'm so excited? What is that? You know what
I'm saying? Actually, what you're describing, I mean, physiologically, neurologically, that's a state of, you know, autonomic activity. Like if you're excited, I mean, obviously that's stimulating, it's motivating, it's energizing, but it also can be a state, and in fact that's what your book is talking about, of overdrive, of over sympathetic nervous system activity, where you're responding to this, you're responding to that, you're jumping at this and you're jumping at that, and that means that the autonomic, the sympathetic nervous system, which is the, you know, activity oriented, is being stimulated and responding to cues and getting excited, whereas the parasympathetic, which is the rest and recovery and restore and some of the, you know, automatic kind of life-supporting functions of the body, gets, you know, underused and doesn't, you know, have enough time, except maybe when you're conked out sleeping or whatever, to do the rest and recover and repair mode that it's responsible for. And that's also calming and all the rest of it. So all of the activities, meditation, yoga, relaxing, whatever, you know, that that are recommended and, you know, countless books written about them are, you know, all designed to help you kind of calm the one side of the nervous system and allow the other one to do its work. So you're 100% right that when, you know, when excited, that's the excitatory nervous system we're speaking about. So, you know, absolutely brilliant. Do you counsel, you know, younger women, or you just know them through your work? Because I think you're, like, I think when one gets older, A, experience to just the physical aging process, you know, honestly, and also time, give a different perspective, you know. But, and also, you know, you have less to prove, time has passed, and also the time of life, you know, you're not, you don't have like 90 years before you or whatever. And so it also, that in and of itself will give perspective. But younger people being born in, you know, or having to work or support a family in the times that we now live in, you know, really kind of have to pump it up to keep going. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And in fact, I think that the kind of dialogue that your experience can create with younger working women and moms who are living through these kinds of challenges would be so incredibly valuable for them. I'm hoping you have a way of engaging with that somehow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I did. However, mm-hmm. I am in the process of retooling my internet presence. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to give that website, unfortunately, but I'm it's okay with me to give for you to give my email address to anybody who would be interested, and then I'll just hand put them into my system while I'm rebuilding it.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah, you know, to your you just said so much, Allison. One thing in particular is that we're all told to prioritize, and nobody really knows what that means. One of the things that my co-author and I get into in the book is this whole idea of trance dynamics, and a trance dynamic is, you know, I'll just give a super simple one, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There are cat people and dog people, right? And
mm-hmm.
I'm a dog person, right? So I get around dogs and I'm like, oh, what a beautiful little doggy. You know, it's like kind of go into my little doggy trance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And your whole language changes. You just become a different person. Like I would never talk to, you know, another adult that way, right?
Right.
And so that's a very, very simple trance. But trances are built from a lifetime of messages that get internalized. So, for example, as a young girl, you know, you're going to school and you're told, oh, you know, you're daddy's little star, or you're going to go to college and you're going to, you know, make something of your life. You're going to do this, you know. So all of those internal messages get cemented into who we are, and they create, you know, sort of the matrix of our action dialogues, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can take this action, for example. Oh, you know, for example, I was a straight-A student, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I've learned more as an adult from the ways that I've failed than I ever learned from my A's in school. And but if you had told me that when I was 18, you know, there's no way I could have accepted that, right? It just would have been too painful to hear it. But back to my point about prioritizing, we are constantly told to prioritize. Nobody knows what it really is, but it sends you into this like state of action, right? I've got to prioritize. And so as a result, you know, you kind of make this list, and, you know, you're checking off the list and all the stuff you've got to do in a day, and and things get, okay, you didn't do these things, they get moved over to that, and then, that gets moved over to that. You know what I'm saying?
Everybody
does it. But if you really take a look at it, just don't prioritize. I mean, if I could recommend one thing, don't do it. Don't do it. Just stand there and be, and let yourself breathe for a little bit, you know, a few minutes. It's not going to kill you. And and just say, okay, what really matters most for me to do today, this day? Like, what are the, like, two, maybe three things that I absolutely have to do? Right? And maybe there's something in there that you want to do. You know, a lot of us are doing what
Surprise.
We have to do, right?
Right.
So, you know, I think just to begin to take a look at that one word, prioritize, and somebody says prioritize, just try to identify with how you feel when that comes up, because it sets up an automatic reaction. Oh, I have to prioritize this, right? You know,
why
it's a priority.
Well, prioritize sounds like you're there with a list. And, you know, and you're saying this is more important than that. You're making, you know, some kind of quantitative or qualitative judgment. And you're saying that if you begin with more with yourself and your state and, you know, more of a global sense of things, that something will emerge that will make the choices better for you. I mean, that's at least what you're implying. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying, or am
yes,
I like misunderstanding
but I do have a process,
that?
Yes, but I do have a process in the book called the six-question paradigm, which basically walks you through, in this particular story, it was a young woman who was taking time off from her job to enjoy she gave birth and was enjoying her child before she went back to work. There was an emergency at work. They felt like she was the only person who could really deal with this particular client. And they tried every which way to get her to come back. And of course she was torn, because she had worked all of those years to get to that position. And she also wanted to enjoy her child. And the company had an emergency, so who was going to get the priority? She wasn't, no matter which choice she made, she wasn't going to be happy with either choice, right? If I choose to ignore my company and just stay home with my child, as we all agreed I would do, right? Then, you know, I'm going to be with my baby, but I'm going to be stressed out. Because I'm going to be thinking about work. I can't just enjoy this. And this is the setup. Do you see what I'm where I'm going with this?
Is that what you mean by a narcissistic situation? I mean, because we never actually looped back and talked about the situational
about
part of it. Yeah, that's okay.
Let me complete with that, and then I'll go back to the narcissistic situation.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
In the end, she walked through the six questions and realized that she could take a little bit of time to coach somebody else to handle the situation, which would give her peace of mind that it was handled. It would take care of her responsibilities with her company, and she'd be able to get the time to be with her baby, which was the original agreement, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But most of the time, we don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're torn. We're trying to do both, and you cannot do both well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean when I say prioritizing. Prioritizing is actually, in reality, it's a process that
mm-hmm.
you go through to be able to make an assessment of what really matters most to be doing to you,
mm-hmm.
for
mm-hmm.
you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's
mm-hmm.
okay to have your own, you know, sensibilities. What does matter most to you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's
mm-hmm.
very difficult for a lot of women to be okay with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're givers, we're doers, we're taking care ofers, we're that kind of people. So
mm-hmm.
back to the narcissistic thing, you know, just the society in general is pretty narcissistic. Most of the images are, you know, we have the Hollywood stars and, you know, just all of these kind of images of people who are doing, you know, they are doing wonderful things and they've worked really hard to get where they are. But
mm-hmm.
there is that sort of glam factor that, you know, that's held as a standard to which to aspire.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, okay, am I allowed to say anything political on here?
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I listened to the Republican debates last night, and candidate Trump had said something disparaging about Carly Fiorina's looks a few weeks
mm-hmm.
ago, and she took it and made it into a very brilliant commercial. She turned it around. But then last night it came up, right? The moderator brought it up, and I don't remember what her answer was,
mm-hmm.
but what he ended up saying to her was, "Oh, you're very pretty."
Mm.
Which was like, oh my God, I almost fell off the couch. It was just like, are you serious? That is just like, so it was such a double-edged sword because
mm-hmm.
he was, you know, I think in his own way, he really meant it. I think you're pretty, but really,
mm-hmm.
who cares? Who cares?
Well, right.
What you think?
I mean, it's not
but,
his, like, it's actually a power move, a dominating move. To
exactly.
take it upon yourself to comment, you know, on someone else's appearance. It's inherently belittling in a political context, certainly where other credentials and capacities are really to the fore or should be to the fore. And if, you know, someone had complimented his tie, you know, or his hair or something, you know, it would have similarly been a put down in few people. Would do that. I think because of the suppression and struggle that so many people are in, there may be some segment of the population that, you know, feels their anger expressed by somebody crossing a line in that kind of way, and that's part of his appeal to a certain aspect of the population.
Right,
so,
but also to the
mm-hmm.
point about narcissism, just
mm-hmm.
that he felt that he had the right to say that.
Yes.
Unblinkingly,
mm-hmm.
right? And, I mean, she held her own, okay, but, you know, a lot of other women, you know, that could have knuckled them under. It would have been, you know,
I think we're conflating narcissism and vanity here. I just, you know, so the way I just have to say this, because You know, we're talking about personal vanity and physical appearance, and certainly, you know, or an overemphasis on physical appearance and, a sort of absorption in that. And I think, I know you said you're not a psychologist, and, you know, but I just, but actually, you know, there have been a number of books recently out about narcissism, and I think that you're right on both counts, both that vanity and an overemphasis on physical appearance, as well as narcissism are very prevalent in our society. And I just want to differentiate, you know, a little bit of the classical psychological definition of narcissism. And I think that, you know, obviously certain of the candidates, if not all of them, or many of them certainly, would meet the definition on that count. You know, so somebody who's vain and physically attractive and who's there in public office because of a certain physical appearance, you know, which then attracts other people, I think that's kind of an overemphasis on looks and vanity and all of that. And there may be candidates who, and many people in public life, who fall into that definition. Narcissism is really kind of more of a, it's all about me. I'm always right. You know, everything has to go my way. I'm empowered to dictate everything, and everyone else has to sort of jump in line. And I would certainly say that some of the candidates, and perhaps Trump himself, really fall into that, as which is kind of a psychological definition of narcissism, as, of course, do many bosses,
right,
many individuals in relationship. And so part of what you're talking about with the overfunctioning is that when you're in, you know, kind of the grasp of a narcissist, a narcissistic society, a narcissistic work ethic, where, you know, the people at the top of the hierarchy are always right and everyone else has to dance to their tune or identify with them or whatever else. That would, to my mind, would be, you know, so I'm answering my own question, would be, you know, more of a narcissistic situation. And, of course, that is a setup for everything your book is talking about, which is
right.
The overfunctioning. We all have to overfunction and, you know, knock ourselves out and dance around and make these tough decisions and everything that you're talking about in the Overfunctioning Woman's Handbook because of the prevalence of narcissism in our society. That would be, you know, and I think that's part of the value of the book. So I also just want to say here to listeners, you can go, you know, you can Google the Overfunctioning Woman's Handbook, Sally Park Rubin, and it is available on Amazon. You can even read it on your Kindle. And so let's segue a bit to, you know, what the book really dwells upon, which is what, you know, what we can do, like how we can free ourselves, what we can do in, you know, to not get caught in the trap that you're describing.
Right.
To get
okay.
ourselves out of it. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the first thing is to recognize what triggers you into autopilot.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
mm-hmm.
You know, for example, my son was diagnosed with autism when he was little. And one thing that's very difficult for people, children with autism, is transitions.
Mm-hmm.
So if I overfunctioned anywhere, it was in the getting, you know, set up to leave the house to go somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go through a lot of extra steps to, you know, help him to be able to be ready to, you
mm-hmm.
know, move on to the next thing. And
mm-hmm.
And so, let's see. What ended up happening was is it was kind of an autopilot for me, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It would be like, okay, you know, 30 minutes before, you know, I'd start, you know, announcing that we were going to be leaving and that, you know, this had to happen and, you know, but it made me anxious, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was no way to, like, routinize it as much as, you know, as I tried. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, charts like, okay, 5 more minutes, you know, this kind of whole thing. But we,
mm-hmm.
you know, as parents, you know, you do this. There's a kind of a thing that kicks us into an autopilot. So I would say to begin to reduce the effect of overfunctioning in our lives is to begin to start to look at where are the places where I go into autopilot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, here's something super simple, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of women go through this. Like my husband would say something like, I didn't pick my shirt up at the laundry, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so, you know, or no, he wouldn't say it that way. He'd say, oh, my shirt's not here, huh?
Right, of course. Mm-hmm.
Right? And
yep.
I'd be like, oh, yes, I didn't get it. Oh, my gosh, I'll pick it up tomorrow. You know,
yeah, right.
And it goes on the list. But it is an anxiety-producing thing. You suddenly decide you're the person who's responsible for that. Why couldn't he pick it up?
Yep.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds very mm-hmm. simple, but it's not. Because
mm-hmm.
it's like walking on, you know, pebbles in bare feet. You
mm-hmm.
can feel all those little, you know, pinpricks to your skin. You know
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So just even down to that minutia level where you
mm-hmm.
go, huh, okay, I went into automatic pilot on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Like,
mm-hmm.
okay, we had this dog that shed a lot, and you could
mm-hmm.
not stay on top of the dust bunnies. Right? And he would say, oh, there's a lot of dust bunnies this morning. You know, oh, my
mm-hmm.
God, I'm heading for the vacuum cleaner. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, why is it my job? Why couldn't he just, like, pick up the vacuum cleaner and do it?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And this is not a complaint about him, but it's just
mm-hmm.
how people relate to each other and how women in particular get hooked into, oh, I have to take care of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that also, you know, what about that? What this reminds me of, too, is that classic meme, which, I mean, I think it was one of the first memes, even way before there were so many memes around, which is, you know, delay and poor organization or whatever it might be on your part do not, you know, mean that I have to, like, rush and knock myself out to compensate, you know, for example. You know the one I'm talking about?
I
can't remember exactly how it goes. But, I mean, that's the kind of thing that one might face in
a job. Allison?
You just mentioned as familiar, you know, from the relational world. I mean, in a job, somebody would, you know, if it was your job, they would say, please vacuum that, whatever. Very straightforward, and it either is or isn't your job kind of thing. But in this kind of situation, you know, people are poorly organized, and then those lower on the spectrum are supposed to, you know, jump and make up the difference kind of thing. I think, or they're in work situations where untenable demands are made upon them. And, of course, in the economics of our world nowadays, that's happening a lot more frequently for obvious reasons. How do people, you know, navigate something like that?
I think you have to do it very consciously.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to give yourself permission to
mm-hmm.
just stop and breathe
mm-hmm.
for a minute and
mm-hmm.
talk yourself through it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you have to write down a little script,
mm-hmm.
you know, that you stick in your pocket and pull
mm-hmm.
it out and say to yourself till you get it, hey,
mm-hmm.
I just noticed I went into automatic pilot to take care of this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, is it my job? Why am I doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Does it
mm-hmm.
need to be done now? I mean,
mm-hmm.
another thing that happens for women is they'll just do it because it takes too long to explain it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think
that's
a lot of us fall into that. It's like,
mm-hmm.
okay, it's going to take me too long. It's going to take more time for me to explain this than if I just handle it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we've
mm-hmm.
got these other 10 things that we're about to do. So
mm-hmm.
let me just get this one thing done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's
you
how
know?
You become over-functioning because
right.
you've just kind of picked up, you know, a few loops extra there from
right.
what, you know, was not usually, and people, you know, and you think it's, oh, well, it's not this, it's not that, it's not this, it's, you know, it's just one more thing. I mean, I just went through something like this today where, you know, I was handling a long to-do list of things, and there was like a topic that, you know, was raised for the third time that was just basically a simple decision on the part of the person raising it that didn't have to involve any decision making or brainstorming, you know, but it was more like, well, let's share by talking about everything. And, you know, I mean, actually, let's talk about how some of the pressure from the work and all of the to-dos that people have and the many things that are burdening women, how that enters the home life and how almost, you know, having to function in the business world can make the home life a little bit like a business, because there's just sort of the excess of work makes the kind of business to-do list or the business-like way of functioning so much more prevalent.
Right. Well, I think that for one thing, we've come to believe that we don't have the right to leave our work at work when we when we get home. And that is a big change between, you know, now and, you know, 30 years ago, for example. So, and, you know, with cell phones, for example, not that I can't live without mine, but, you know, it's like, you know, there's so much that's happening that we allow these interruptions to chip away at the time that we have. Because it's like, ooh, if I don't deal with this right now, I'm going to forget. Right? And so, and then I think to your question, what happens for women, and maybe this happens to men too, I'm sure it does, but when we're doing so many of these little dances with all of these things, right, feeling pressured, feeling the anxiety build up, you know, we can turn around and blow up at the wrong thing. You know, and I see that a lot with moms. You know, they'll say, "Oh my God, I got completely mad at my kid about this. It was just not her fault." But I just like it was one too many things. She couldn't tie her shoes fast enough, and we had to go. And I'd already told her three times. You know, and so, you know, how do we let children just be children? And, you know, and give them the time that they need to learn in the way that they learn. You know, it's very difficult. And so we wonder why all of these kids are having a tough time when they get to be teenagers. They've been rushed through childhood. They have not been allowed to graze. Everything has been scheduled from, you know, morning till evening. They've had no downtime. You know, they don't know who they are.
That's really true. I mean, I think that's a really, you know, we at least are coping with this problem from, you know, the life position of having come along, you know, in childhood with, you know, a whole different kind of upbringing and energy. That's a really you know, that's really hard. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, it forms the nervous system of the child in such a different way.
Well,
what
like
are your thoughts about what happens there?
I'm in a, I live in a boy neighborhood. We just have a lot of boys here. And when my son was little, you know, I mean, all the boys went out and rode their bikes on the street, right? My kid was not a competitive kid. For me, it was just like, if you can ride the bike and not crash into something, I'm happy, right? Whereas, you know, the king of the neighborhood, lovely kid, super competitive, very athletic, you know, everything became a competition. So, you know, slowly the kids who were not competitive, you know, basically got left out. And so, you know, And my son wasn't the only one. I mean, he was good at other things, but he just wasn't good at that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
mm-hmm.
and it was something that he really wanted to do because it was engaging with the other kids in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And in his situation, he was, you know, high-functioning enough to be able to do that. So, but, you know, it was sad. It was sad to watch. There was, for example, there was soccer, right? And
mm-hmm.
a bunch of the dads in first grade, okay, got the kids together. They organized and, you know, just called all the parents and said, hey, we're gonna teach the boys how to play soccer. And there's
mm-hmm.
a field not too far. So
mm-hmm.
it's like, oh, great, you know. So, okay, my son kicked the ball in the wrong direction, but he wasn't the only one,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And one weekend we were gone. And the city apparently had prevailed upon them to, if you're going to play in this field, you have to be an official team. So Sam didn't get invited to the team. They
mm-hmm.
just, like, formed the team over the weekend. And when we came back and showed up for soccer practice on Monday,
mm-hmm.
he wasn't allowed to play
mm-hmm.
because they were
Jeez.
Now a team.
Oh,
you
my
know?
Goodness.
And so, you know,
so
and it
harsh.
Was like, that was very heartbreaking. And I, you know, of course, took issue with it. And
mm-hmm.
I was given this whole line of, you know, well, you know, they're a team and, you know, they're going to be competing with others and he can't compete and da 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 da. And I was like, but what about playing soccer together? I thought this is what, you know, we were just a bunch of dads and, you know, the kids teaching, you know, the boys how to play soccer. We're talking about 6-year-olds.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh,
anyway, years later, I was in the ER. My husband
mm-hmm.
hurt his shoulder, and I ran into one of those mothers who gave me a really hard time
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, her kid sat in the middle of the field. So it's not like, you know, it's not like, you know, he was one of the star players. But she
mm-hmm.
apologized because she finally got it. It's
mm-hmm.
like, when, you know, where? How are you going to let these kids just, you know, learn how to socialize with other kids without it being a competition.
Mm-hmm. And that right away, you know, sets up the same, you know,
stress.
Kind of rushed and, you know, the whole trend that you're talking about where everyone has to overfunction. So actually, I mean, what you're really doing in, you know, the Overfunctioning Woman's Handbook is really making us aware of how built in this is in our society and in all of us. And, you know, so with that awareness, you know, you can actually make a choice point and you know, and stop and not buy into it. So, you know, I want to again mention to listeners that you can find the Overfunctioning Woman's Handbook by today's guest, Sally Park Rubin, and her co-author on Amazon. And highly recommend that because, I'm really enjoying this whole discussion because I think it's something really important that we all need to think about. I mean, but you know, one of the things that I've always struggled with personally is that, because I certainly meet this definition without a doubt, not only everything you're mentioning from, oh, I see a dust bunny, or, you know, someone sees a dust bunny and I think I have to jump. You know, I think it's extremely common. I certainly fall prey to all of that. I fall prey to, you know, jumping around, you know, and tap dancing in a work situation to try to make it work for somebody who's a poor organizer, you know, poor leader and manager, you know, and then oneself is compensating. I've certainly fallen into that. But the other thing, too, is that, you know, in trying to address some of the problems in our society and that we're creating for, you know, the young people, our world, our own health, all of that, the environmental damage we're creating, the ecological damage we're creating, and consequently, of course, the health problems we're creating.
Mm-hmm.
That's very much been an ongoing theme of the Connect the Dots show. Listeners who want to catch up with any of our past content over the last 4 years will find a whole range of policy topics that I've covered on the show and that I cover in my writing and reporting and everything on Alternet and Huffington Post and elsewhere, is really looking at what the choices, big picture, we're making as a society, that then drive us, little picture, you know, to jump around and desperately try to compensate or stay afloat amidst, you know, or stay healthy and alive, keep our world healthy amidst all these big picture decisions. So, you know, even taking that on, which most people feel pretty overwhelmed by or powerless in relationship to, is in itself the kind of very definition of overfunctioning, you know,
yes.
The notion that we could make a social change. So, you know, I think a lot of people call activists, you know, angry or whatever, and maybe it's because they themselves feel angry about, you know, the sort of harsh things that are created by our big picture decisions, you know, that are high risk, or and, you know, they may feel angry at the fact that these decisions are made. They may feel angry that someone's calling their attention to the bad results of these decisions on their lives and the lives of, you know, many people we know and ourselves and all. So, but part of it too is just there's a limit to functioning, and we sort of have to, you know, how much we can handle. And people, a lot of it is overwhelm. People have to sort of draw a margin around themselves and say, you know, this is as much as I can handle. So we're, you know, and this much I can't handle. I mean,
But I think that's a very mature thing. I think your typical overfunctioner is incapable of doing that, of creating that margin, or, you know, what some people would say boundaries. But I think boundaries has become a trans trigger word, back to the trans thing. I would like to talk about anger for a second, because we address it in the book. You know, I think we have a very unhealthy relationship with anger. We think it's bad that we're not supposed to have it. But what it is it's really just a signal, because you have an emotional, you know, a molecular reaction if something makes you angry, right? It's a response. It's an honest response. It's a communication in your body. That's your body is saying, okay, I'm feeling put out about something. What needs to be communicated? And I think that if people can, instead of going, you know, flying off, you know, blah, 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 whatever, right? Just to say, okay, take that step back. What needs to be communicated? Why am I feeling angry? Why am I feeling put out at the moment? You know, if you can shift the word anger to put out, it's I think it slows it down enough to be able to kind of get out of that automatic pilot of, you know, bitchy or, you know, whatever the response is, right? To, oh, okay, wait a minute. Something just happened that made me feel this way, and I need to communicate it to that person because that's where it came, you know, that's where the interaction occurred. And it, in a sense, anger can actually be an amazing tool for recognizing when communication needs to happen and how to, you know, and taking those steps, which takes a lot of courage, because when you feel that way, it's often very, very difficult to say how you feel. So in the Overfunctioning Woman's Handbook, we have written out a process that each person can adapt to their own, you know, tailor to themselves. Like, for example, myself, I'm one of those people, if I feel angry about something, I usually need a little more time to process it. Some people are able to just go, you know, respond right away. Hey, wait a minute, I didn't like that. Don't do that, da-da-da-da. I used to be like 20 minutes down the road before I'd even realize I was angry. Like, hey, wait a minute, that really bothered me, right? Now I can feel it right away, but I still don't always respond to it right away. Sometimes I need a few minutes. Sometimes I need a few days to just like, hey, you know, that thing that happened the other day, you know, that really upset me. Can we talk about it? I think as a culture, and this would be, I'd love to talk about this another time, Allison. I think as a culture, we have a very unhealthy relationship with anger. You know, there's a lot of attention on guns, and I think it's appropriate that there should be attention on guns. But what's behind the gun problem is an anger problem. And that is simply not being addressed. you know, children get suppressed with medication to, you know, control their bad behavior or whatever. You know, that's a whole other topic, but I just wanted to just briefly touch on that whole thing about anger, because overfunctioning women don't feel like they have the right to get angry, or anger is sort of an annoying emotion that gets in the way of the forward flow of getting things done. So I don't have time to be angry. I don't have time for that right now. I'm just going to get this done, and then I'll deal with it later, or not, and suppress that, and then there you go, down that whole, you know, downstream thing on bad health and hurting yourself in those ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's very deep. You know, Allison, the problem of overfunctioning is so big in our culture that we don't even really see it. It's just like I said in the beginning, you know, this is water. We're in it. It's so difficult to step back from it and to say, okay, wait a minute. You know, what really matters to me to be doing? How did I just feel about this? Where do I want to go from here?
Yeah, I think also that there's a reason, you know, why people are driven into this role of overfunctioning, and it's because of the larger economic policies and drivers of our society, where, you know, the middle class is shrinking. You know, there are certain areas that are sacrifice zones environmentally. I mean, any of that, it means that, you know, there are actual threats to survival, to economic viability, to survival of the planet, of humans on the planet. You know, all of that is actually going on. And so the sense that we, you know, are operating within an individual frame, and that we as individuals have to cope with the end products of these bigger picture things to stay, you know, to stay in the middle class, run a little faster, run a little harder, beat out other people, you know, to survive, you know, or to get by in a sort of devolving system where everyone has to work more and more and more. That's kind of the, you know, the bigger picture. I mean, I've seen this in the fields that I work in and the fields that I cover. I mean, you know, when you have, you know, cutbacks in journalism or declines in the publishing industry, these are, you know, the fields that I've worked in, you know, then those are felt by the people working. If you have commercial ownership of the media, which we have, which kind of wipes out certain kinds of coverage and, you know, reporting and stuff like that, then we don't, you know, we're not tooled up to be citizens in the democracy, and people are more poorly educated, they're making stupid social choices, and all of this comes raining down. So people are overfunctioning, really, to compensate, and it's entirely understandable. So what we're talking about today, through our conversation on the Overfunctioning Woman's Handbook, are kind of allowing ourselves to retain awareness of the fact that this is happening, to have some measure of choice at the personal level, to avoid going into what you, Sally, are describing as a trance around it, so that it's happening on automatic pilot and you don't even know it without registering it.
I'm sorry for interrupting, but and to create your own standard for what success means. And I did want to say one thing, Allison. You know, the book is very thorough. And when I advise people, that you get one experience if you read it cover to cover, and you get another experience if you just pick and choose the topics that apply to your life, because the chapters are organized, you know, anxiety, anger, you know, just like that. So you don't have to read the book cover to cover to get a great experience from it. You can pick and choose the topics that are really most poignant to what you are dealing with that in that one particular day.
So that's important to say. So it can really support you in that way, and I would put in, you know, because this is the ongoing theme of connect the dots, create a little breathing room to participate and have a say in what goes on in our country that is creating these kinds of conditions. We haven't done a lot of shows on veterans, but, you know, we make a decision to go to war, and some people come back wounded from it. The families absorb it. What you're describing is the way women and families absorb, you know, the bigger picture stresses and pressures and the increase in those in terms of what's going on in our society. So, you know, a big hug and pat on the back to all of the listeners and the women and men and everyone we know who's doing this. And this is why, you know, we have to connect the dots. So I want to thank you so much, Sally Park Rubin, for being with us and talking with us and sharing your wisdom from the Overfunctioning Woman's Handbook. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's really been a great conversation. So much fun. We'll have to have you back and talk more.
I'd love to. Thank you.
Yeah. And I just want to urge you, listeners, to go to Amazon and get, you know, the Overfunctioning Woman's Handbook on Common Sense to Deal with Impossible Jobs and Impossible People. You know, if our conversation today has spoken to you, which I'm sure it has, I bet it has, you can also check the Connect the Dots archive on the Progressive Radio Network for past programs and ongoing programs. A lot of these shows address the kinds of issues that we're talking about, the bigger picture issues. And I'm also really thrilled that on today's show we could kind of go more into the side of how this personally affects us, because it is doing that. And so thank you so much. We'll be back with you next week. We're always Wednesday, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Thank you for listening to our show. You can reach me via my Facebook page, Connecting the Dots for Health. And if you have show ideas or any comments, anything you'd like to say, I'd be very, very much love to hear from you. Be well.
Somewhere,